Welcome to the end of the weekend.
Please don't let today be Monday. Please don't let today be Monday. Please, 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 please don't let today be Monday.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
And then what followed was bad even by Monday standards.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I always forget how many drum beats are in this song, and I always think, oh, I'll come in at this part. But that's like 30 seconds. So then I wait too long, or I jump in too soon. Welcome back to Sports Sunday. I'm Josh Briscoe. We're going to talk to some Chiefs here in just a moment. The MMQB just tweeted out an article that I haven't read yet about how all 32 NFL teams handle analytics. And that seems like a very interesting story that I will probably read during the next break. But the thing at the... At the top of my priority list for the last few weeks has been the Chiefs and John Dorsey. Today, it got pushed back to third-hour conversations because there isn't a lot of news. But Albert Breer for the MMQB put out a superb article about John Dorsey and where it fell apart between him and the Chiefs. And if you haven't read it yet, you just have to. It's by Albert Breer on the MMQB. It breaks down everything that happened. And a bunch of reports that we had heard rumblings of and we had inched towards. He puts straight out there. And basically this entire story has also lined up with everything that I've heard from sources. Sources have said... It's weird for me having actual sources. Usually I'm just like, I just speculate wildly. And, you know, if I get it right, then I look like a genius. And whenever I'm wrong, it's like, well, I didn't have any sources or anything. But everything here in this Albert Breer story is on point. Here are a couple of little blurbs from it that I think will speak to those of you who haven't read the story yet. On the John Dorsey dismissal and where it went wrong for the Chiefs. Here's a snippet. Others in the building saw signs of decisions becoming less collaborative and more centered on Dorsey's instincts. It also didn't go unnoticed that Dorsey's draft picks, like Fisher and Devune Tardif, were the ones getting paid early. And the way the Jeremy Maclin release was handled, key members of the staff didn't know until after it became public, didn't help squash the internal whispering. I mean, that's huge. That's huge. Key members of the staff, whatever that means, key members of the staff not knowing about the Jeremy Maclin trade, the Jeremy Maclin release until after it happened, is huge. John Dorsey getting away from this system the Chiefs have built up with Andy Reid and John Dorsey, having this sort of collaborative atmosphere, that dissolving in the later years is huge. The idea that he's playing favorites with his contracts for his own draft picks and not actually doing it in a meritorious way with the guys who most deserve the contract extensions and on the timeline that they most deserve and that benefits the team in the biggest way, going outside of that is a tremendous breach of what you expect from your general manager, especially in this collaborative way.
Does it say anything in that article about the Eric Berry contract negotiations? Because what a lot of people don't know, and I know you're aware of this, is that Clark Hunt actually had to get involved mm-hmm. in that contract situation, and that's one of the reasons that they decided to part ways, because Dorsey ended up costing them too much money. He paid Alex Smith a year too early when he could have paid Justin Houston. It cost them $100 million. Didn't want to pay Eric Berry. Cost them $78 million. And Clark takes pride in the Chiefs being a first-class organization. And when you run the name through the mud like they did that you did this offseason, that didn't make him happy.
No, and there are pieces of all of that. There's some things throughout the story like that. And then also, yeah, in that larger conversation that we've had where Dorsey cost the Chiefs big money with the Berry and the Houston deals, and then also that Clark Hunt had to get involved in the negotiations for the Eric Berry deal.
And the fact that the Chiefs are already $18 million over the salary cap for next season.
And that next season, the Chiefs are going to be paying Alex Smith, Tom Bahaly, and Jeremy Maclin $10 million to not play for them. That's going to happen, and it's going to be incredible. So that's something that we spent a lot of time breaking down those reasons, sort of in the immediate aftermath of the Dorsey firing, was what it was. I mean, whatever, parting of ways. Those are some of the immediate things we discussed. But this Albert Breer story brings out a lot of other doubts that are being had in the organization that weren't public previously, which is why the story is so interesting to me. Also, as Breer reported, some things that we had speculated on, Dorsey started freewheeling and Clark Hunt started having Scott Pioli flashbacks, and Clark Hunt did not want to sign on for a 5-year extension with John Dorsey, giving him 6 more years of that kind of fear in the operation. It just was not, it was not something Clark Hunt was willing to sign up for. Also, and this is, again, from the article, as one source explained, it wasn't dysfunction so much as it was decisions were being made that seemed to come out of nowhere. So that existed, but the people here weren't aware of that. The ownership was aware of it. You look back now how it worked out, ownership was more aware that it didn't need to be run that way, which is saying that Clark Hunt was more involved than people realized. Even, I think that's speculating that even John Dorsey didn't realize that Clark Hunt was paying that close of attention to the whole decision-making process. But that is speculative on my part. Here is also an extremely interesting thing that Breer laid out. So here are a few flashpoints to prove it over the last 18 months. These are things, three large points here. Some of them I think ended up being decent, but three large points here that left a confused expression apparently on the faces of many people in this front office. First, the selection of Stanford quarterback Kevin Hogan in the 5th round of the 2016 draft. Breer writes, that move stunned scouts and coaches based on the evaluation and meetings leading up to the draft. Hogan didn't wind up making the team 4 months later and started last season on the Browns practice squad. This is a ridiculous black mark on John Dorsey's resume in Kansas City. Not because a 5th round pick is an extremely valuable asset, although you've seen teams move valuable players for less. But the Chiefs ended up taking Kevin Hogan before Tyreek Hill. So if you want to give credit to John Dorsey for getting the Tyreek Hill pick right, you've got to keep in mind that was their second 5th round selection behind a guy who ultimately didn't make the team. Also, as Albert Breer is reporting here, that stunned scouts and coaches in the building. The department that exists to inform these decisions were ultimately shocked by the way Dorsey ultimately went. Dorsey watching his own tape, going off his own gut feelings. It's not a great way to run a team. Second thing that sort of threw the front office off. The 4-year, $48 million extension with left tackle Eric Fisher in August 2016. At the time of the signing, Breer writes, Fisher had failed to entrench himself at the left tackle spot he was drafted to play. In fact, Fisher lost the job to Donald Stevenson during the 2015 season, and Fisher has flipped to the right side. The Chiefs still did the big contract, despite having a year left on Fisher's rookie deal and an option year after that. I don't have a huge problem. I never had a huge problem with signing Eric Fisher to an extension because he, at the time of the contract extension, he had just had sort of that year at left tackle that made me think, you know, there's some growth to be had here. He's moving back in the right direction. The timing of it, though, was a little strange when there were 2 more years of club control to be had, essentially. Investing in him at that moment was odd to me. Then the other thing here that Breer mentions is the 5-year, $41 million deal for guard Laurent Duvernay-Tardif in February. This deal came, like Fisher's, in Duvernay-Tardif's first offseason eligible for a second contract. Meanwhile, the Justin Houston and Eric Berry contract talks simmered. Cap guru Trip McCracken was let go last month, and the team has spent the past couple of years perilously close to the salary cap. I think the thing that sort of put some more flames on the fire, that doesn't make any sense, put some more wood on the fire, I suppose, of what I mentioned just a few minutes ago, the idea that Dorsey was signing his own players well before they needed to be signed and was not giving the same sort of treatment to guys who were brought in not under his discretion. These LDT and Fisher deals might end up being fine, but they came as soon as they were eligible for their second contract. They came as soon as possible. The Justin Houston and Eric Berry deals were both put up against them being forced into a prove-it scenario when both of them proved it very loudly. and it cost the Chiefs millions of dollars.
I've got all their salaries up here according to Spotrac.
Mm-hmm.
Fisher, you can get out of it after 2 years on his new deal, and it'll only cost 5.1 in dead cap, and
which is still a huge number. That's
right. He's supposed to make like 15.
That $5 million is just about what Derek Johnson's making this year, so it's a big number.
And then Duvernay-Tardif, there's an opt out after 2020. Yep. It would be a $4 million cap hit, and then Eric Berry, with 3 years left on his deal, that would be like a $7 million dead cap hit.
Yeah, all three of those guys are tied up long term, and again, those three guys might all end up being building blocks of this team. I think you have to expect Eric Berry to be. I'm fine with LDT, I guess, because of how Seth Kaiser sold me on Duvernay-Tardif right after that contract. We had him on the show. I was not in any way in love with LDT during actual season, during actual gameplay. And I'm fine with Eric Fisher. But the problem here is, as much as we've talked about the salary cap problems, which I've beaten that dead horse over and over and over, and I'll probably do it again before the season starts, with the $9.5 million in dead cap money this year, as the Broncos carry $100,000 in dead cap money, and as they're going to be paying Smith and Macklin and Houston and Smith, Macklin and Tamba $10 million next year to not play for the Chiefs, all those salary cap issues, the contract issues of waiting too long on Berry and Houston, we've talked about that ad nauseum. The thing that's new from this story is that John Dorsey was making those calls as a rogue operative. John Dorsey was playing this with his gut in a way that Clark Hunt and I'm sure Andy Reid weren't comfortable with and weren't signing off on as moves that certainly benefited the franchise. You can't have that kind of uncertainty where you're not sure if your general manager is making the right football decisions free of any clouded judgment he may have based off of how he felt about the player when they joined the organization. Because that extends even to guys who are brought in under Dorsey. If Andy Reid was the one calling for Jeremy Maclin to be brought in, then it makes sense that Dorsey would say, you know what, we're going to part ways with Maclin and just eat all this dead cap money, even though we've signed Laurent Duvernay-Tardif to a big contract extension. We're gonna make our cap money this way. You can't play favorites like that if you're a general manager trying to manage an NFL roster and a salary cap. Now listen, John Dorsey did a lot of things really, really well. What he did for the bottom of the Chiefs roster was fantastic. He's found value in places that has helped to make up for the problems found elsewhere. But the problems still exist. I saw this on Twitter. I think it was Arrowhead Addict who tweeted it out. That Dorsey has made up for his cap deficiencies by finding, you know, Terrence Mitchell really cheaply. And I think that's just thinking really small. I think that's being very short-sighted. It's being someone who is content to rationalize and to content to be content. Content to have a contending team. Because John Dorsey's ability to find cheap talent is great. That's a great asset to have. But how much better is this team as it currently stands with an extra $10 million? The Chiefs are still in a bad cap scenario, even though they might have one of the five best, most talented rosters in the league. Those two things don't have to be mutually exclusive. They're not.
Bad cap situation, and you still haven't signed your first round pick yet.
Well, that'll happen eventually. They've got the money.
No, they got to free up like $4 million more dollars.
No, they don't. To sign Mahomes? No,
They're still over the cap.
Not this year, they're not. Go to over the cap and check the numbers and everything. No, man, they were over the cap by like $4 million, and then they cut Maclin. They've got the cap space. I don't know why the Mahomes contract is taking a while. It probably has something to do with his fifth year option, because it's going to be, that's the part that, as far as I understand, is a little bit flexible. It'll happen before training camp, though. It has to. It'd be such a horrific look for your quarterback of the future to be a training camp hold up, but he was also at OTAs and everything. So I'm not worried about Mahomes. So you can have an extremely talented roster. You can be in a good place roster wise and still be in a severely underwhelming place. You can still not be maximizing what you have. And the Chiefs absolutely aren't. Their first chance to maximize what they have will be 2019. Because we already know they're going to be paying Jeremy Maclin, Tom Bahaly, and Alex Smith big money to not play for them next season. Now, you can have the argument of, well, is that worth firing your general manager? Maybe not. That's the argument that you can have. You can acknowledge the discrepancy between his ability to cultivate talent at the bottom of the roster and his ability to manage the cap. But I think if you're that Albert Breer story, you at the very least can understand where Clark Hunt is coming from. Where one of your two most important employees who determine the franchise's future, one of those two guys is simply operating outside of procedure. He had that with Scott Pioli. He didn't want another guy who was going to act from his gut and his head in a way that no one else understood or was privy to, and then suffer the consequences of it. And just wasn't going to do that again. So with all of that out there, with all of that dirty laundry aired, I don't have the kind of gripes about firing John Dorsey that I would have expected to have at this point on the day that he was let go. It makes sense. I can follow the logic on it without making excuses for the Chiefs, or without being, there's also a ton of this on Twitter, without being one of the Chiefs fans that have talked themselves into firing John Dorsey. Like, yeah, because we've learned a lot. We've learned a lot since then. Whenever Andy Reid signed this extension, I was hoping for and was expecting the Chiefs to announce a John Dorsey extension soon after. Thought it was a little weird they didn't do it at the same exact time, the same announcement or whatever, but I was hoping for those two extensions to be made in the same day. Find out Dorsey's canned. Feels like a bad move. Even though we had been talking about the Chiefs cap situation before that happened. You follow some of the logic? It starts to make sense. And it seems like Brett Veach is the leader in the clubhouse for the job. He's the in-house candidate. And if he does end up getting the job, he continues to prove everything that we thought we knew about this situation. Because Brett Veach changes as little as possible. The only real thing that Brett Veach changes is he gives you a little bit less experience of a candidate, not a little bit, I mean, he gives you a significantly less experienced general manager, which is a negative, but it gives you the positive of being a guy that you believe is going to work in the system. A guy who's not going to surprise any of the scouts on draft day, or isn't going to surprise Andy Reid with a personnel decision, or isn't going to surprise Clark Hunt with a contract. And right now, it seems like that's what the Chiefs want. 913-3810-810 if you want to talk about it. We'll be back here on Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday.
Beards is just shaking his head on the other side because I've talked to him about politics today. And he told me that if I say the name James Comey, he's going to turn on national programming and just turn off this entire station. So we're not going to do that.
With Joshua Briscoe.
I think that's fair.
It totally is.
If you say that name, I'm going to start yelling like, danger, danger, something like that.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday. I'm Joshua Briscoe. You can tweet me at JB Briscoe if you're feeling it. Talking about the Chiefs a lot this hour. If you've got something else, we can take calls on whatever. But I'm in a very Chiefs mood currently. It's 913-3810-810 here. John Dorsey hand, Brett Veach. Seems to be the guy coming up next. Albert Breer had a really interesting story about it. Talk about that last segment. We'll talk to you also. We'll kick it off here with Tommy Moe. Tommy Moe, you're on Sports Sunday. How are you? Tommy Moe? Tommy Moe, we'll try again. Tommy Moe.
Hey, are you there?
Hey, yeah, we got you. What's up?
Sounds great. Yeah, I was interested when you were reading the Albert Breer story that he referred to McCracken as the cap guru.
Yes, that's how it was.
If he's such a guru, why are we in cap hell?
Yeah, I don't think he was a very successful guru. He was brought on to be the guru and then failed. He was the cap Sherpa, and we died halfway up the mountain.
Yes, he was more goo than roo.
Yes.
Thank you. Does anybody talk about Justin Houston and Barry getting, they got paid though? After all was said and done and all the grief they had to go through, they still became the highest paid at their positions, I believe. I think Justin Houston, did he pass Von Miller's contract? It was close.
I think he might have gotten past since then. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Von Miller makes more than him. And the reason, Tommy, that they talk about Barry and Houston is because Dorsey waited a year too late to pay them because he wanted to be a stickler and wanted them to go out and prove it. So Justin Houston went out and got 22 sacks. Well, then you can't not give Justin Houston $22 million. Eric Berry got franchised and was willing to work out a long-term deal, but John Dorsey wasn't willing. But he gave Eric Fisher $48 million, and Eric Berry goes out and has the best season of his career, and it cost the Chiefs $78 million when it would have cost them a whole lot less had Dorsey decided to just pay them a year sooner rather than a year later.
I don't feel like I heard your point at that time, though. Go ahead.
I agree, but would you agree with this? Did he pay Travis Kelce a year early or 2 years early? Wouldn't you think Travis Kelce? Don't you think he got Travis Kelce locked up at a pretty reasonable price?
Yeah, both the Travis Kelce and the Ron Parker deals are the two that stand out to me as the two big successes. The two guys who he got at the right time and paid a very team-friendly amount. Tom Bahali is a disaster, and then as Derek mentioned, the Houston and Barry things were, you know, a year too late, whatever that ends up costing you in the tens of millions of dollars. But no, it wasn't a. I guess is the point you're making that it wasn't like a total failure. What exactly are you angling at?
What I'm trying to say is, like I said, I don't. You know, you talked about the Denver Broncos only being 100,000. I think John Dorsey did a great job, and I've said this numerous times. I'm going to be repetitive. There's never been a four-year span where Chiefs have won more games in 4 years, which is 44, including the playoff win, in Chiefs history. And I attribute that to John Dorsey and Andy Reid. They worked well together. And I just think it's a mistake. But you guys, really, we won't know this if it was a mistake or for 3 or 4 years.
Right.
Because all the players that he picked or scouted are going to be on this roster for a while. And the for every Tom Ali that we overpaid and we're in cap hell, we're going to have Tyreek Hill for pennies on the dollar for the next 2-3 years. It's a fifth-round draft choice that, you know, is an all-pro for, you know, under fire. So for every yang, there seems to be a yang. And Alex Smith, I don't mind having him this year and probably next year. You know, that's a nice safety blanket, so to speak, to have if Patrick Mahomes is not ready to go next year. So I don't have any problem with Alex Smith. So like I said, you know, John Dorsey, I thought did a lot of very good things, and I don't know whether it just became a personality clash between him and Clark Hunt. To me, I feel like that was the number one thing. There was a personality clash between those two, and they just could not get along. And even Andy Reid, who, you know, how many guys do you call by nickname, hey, Dorse? And all of a sudden, I don't think they were at odds with each other. They probably disagree, but I just don't really think that those two, I don't think Andy Reid walked into Clark Hunt's office and said, hey, you know, I just don't think this is going to work with John Dorsey, a guy that he calls Dorse every time you heard him refer to him.
But if those guys really cared about John Dorsey, two guys could have saved his job in Mark Donovan and Andy Reid, and neither one of them
I don't know if Mark Donovan could have saved this job, but Andy Reid could have spoken up. Tommy Moe, you make a couple of good points and a couple of things that I disagree with you on. Because you mentioned, you know, that Reid and Dorsey worked well together. They had wins together. They were successful together. But these stories seem to indicate that between Reid and Dorsey and Clark Hunt, there was a significant amount of tension that wasn't helpful. That's out there. You mentioned the success and the fact they're going to have Tyreek Hill for years with pennies on the dollar. absolutely true. The other thing that we're never going to be able to know fully, although I've been able to put together two and two in a few situations, is exactly how much of each of these draft picks and each of these deals were actually attributable to Dorsey, and how much of them were Andy Reid really pushing for a guy. And from a couple of things I've heard, it seems like Andy Reid would be the guy to credit for the Tyreek Hill pick, even though he didn't seem to want any of that credit whenever the media backlash was coming. So that's up in the air. The other thing is that the contracts there've been good and bad contracts, but overall, is the cap situation as far as the dead money, not the space, but the dead money. The problem there comes with Jay Howard, Jeremy Maclin, Josh Malga, Kavari Russell, Ramique Wilson. The Chiefs are paying all of those guys large sums of money this year to play elsewhere. That's where the cap problem comes for me and for the Chiefs, obviously.
Yeah, but do you mind the wins and losses? Isn't that kind of the bottom line, wins and losses? You know, would you rather have the Denver Broncos roster that's only $100,000 in cap hell, or the Chiefs roster? Which roster would you rather have right now?
Over the last 3 years, I'll take the Broncos because they have
right
a Super
now.
Bowl.
No, I'm talking. No, I don't care about the last 3 years. I'm talking
about
of 2017.
Citing the last 3 years based off of their success. That's what you just said. The last 3 years are why Reid and Dorsey should be trusted in the future,
okay,
because they've had success these last 3 years. The Broncos' last 3 years of success is a completely different game. So, no, I don't think it's a bottom-line thing. Now, listen, right now, I think the Chiefs probably have the better roster between those two teams, probably. I'd have to do some real digging to be able to bet my life on that. The quarterback situation is huge in Denver, obviously. But the thing where I lash out against the, you know, well, the dead money is not that big of a deal because the roster is in good shape. The roster's not good enough right now. It's just not. It's good enough to win a bunch of regular season games, and that's great. That's more fun than having a roster that can't win regular season games. But if you're going to say, well, that $9.5 million in dead money they're dealing with this year, that's not that big of a deal because the roster's in good shape. The roster's not that good. The roster isn't Super Bowl good right now, and it's built around Alex Smith. We've seen for several years now, but we saw last year especially what happens when this offense built around Alex Smith just gets stuck. They lost to a kicker last year in the AFC in the divisional round of the AFC playoffs last year. They lost to a kicker because the offense wasn't good enough, the roster wasn't good enough.
Well, they lost to a running back that shredded our defense, if you really want to know. If we stop Le'Veon Bell, we win the game.
If you don't allow six field goals,
if you score a touchdown in any sort of meaningful place, you win the game. There are plenty of places from that Steelers game where you can put the blame. But the thing that will always get me is the fact that it was six field goals that the Steelers had to score to.
I agree with that, but the next game, Le'Veon Bell pulled his groin. The next game, he was a non-factor. Yeah. Pittsburgh was a non-factor.
Well, the Chiefs,
Le'Veon Bell, we win that game.
But I don't think you can go into that game expecting to stop Le'Veon Bell more than they did. They stopped Le'Veon Bell from ever scoring. They stopped the whole Steelers team from ever scoring. The offense last year was atrocious. It was is absolutely putrid in some of the most important places.
And the Patriots also last year in that playoff game in the AFC Championship also shut down Antonio Brown. Bill Belichick takes away your two best weapons year in and year out when they play a home playoff game. That's one
but
of
I'm
the
not
reasons
even talking
they were also
about
successful.
That. I don't care. What the Chiefs defense did against the Steelers last year was good enough. If you stop Le'Veon Bell, then the game goes differently. But if you have any sort of meaningful scores, the game goes differently. And that's the defense did its job and the offense didn't. That's why I end up placing the blame of that game on the offense first and foremost, maybe first, second, and third. Because the defense did plenty well enough. The Le'Veon Bell was a threat the whole game, but he never actually cost the Chiefs points. Not in the touchdown variety, at least. So that's where I ended up.
So I'm going to leave it at this. Do you blame the playoff loss more on John Dorsey or on Andy Reid?
Well, I think that's the whole question. I think that's where, if you're going to look at Dorsey versus Reid, who do you want to invest in, and who cost you more, who got you further? I don't know. If you're going to look at me long term and say who do you place more value in, I think Andy Reid is definitely more irreplaceable. I think Andy Reid is a bigger asset at head coach than John Dorsey is at GM. I'm not sure we're going to see a huge difference between John Dorsey and Brett Veach in the long run. I hope we don't, because if we don't, everywhere except for the cap situation, it's going to largely mean success. I think if you removed Andy Reid and you put you put Matt Nagy as in the at the helm of this team, it would look very, very different.
Yep. So I probably agree with that. But like I said, I just appreciate the time and effort here with you guys and the back and forth. And like I said, we won't know for 3 or 4 years if the John Dorsey firing was good or bad. It's going to take 3 or 4 years of whoever the GM and whoever he picks, his working relationship with Clark Hunt and Andy Reid, to see how that meshes. So, guys, you guys have a great day.
You too, Tommy. I appreciate the time and the conversation, because I'm happy to have a different perspective hop in. One other thing that Tommy Mo mentioned that I forgot about until just now, because I opened a tab and then I forgot to look at my back at my computer until just now, is I cannot see Alex Smith being the quarterback of this team next year. I mean, I can, but I couldn't see myself making that decision for the Chiefs, like in any scenario. Because next year, Alex Smith's cap hit is essentially $17 million. It's $16.9 million if you must know the precise number. And it'll cost the Chiefs $7.2 million to let him go, but it gives them $9.7 million in cap space whenever that eventually does happen. It's a lot of dead money to carry, and I've been telling you, they're going to be carrying... this is pre-June 1st. That's this year. I'm sorry, I gave you the wrong numbers. I apologize. That seemed a little high. And the Tom Bahadley number was astronomical. Let me fix that. The Alex Smith, this is why, okay. Forget everything I said the last 30 seconds, because I'm a dummy. I'm a big, dumb idiot who can't read good. I reset now. I opened the wrong tab. In 2018, to cut Alex Smith would cost the Chiefs $3.6 million. His number next year will be $20.6 million. It'll save him $17 million in cap space. I cannot see the Chiefs voluntarily paying Alex Smith an extra $17 million. That $3.6 million number is difficult. And you're already paying Jeremy Maclin $4.8 million in dead cap space next year. And you're going to be paying Tom Bahadley $1.6 just about to save $7 million up against his contract. That's prorated out. The Chiefs were expecting that to happen. That Tom Bahadley deal was never supposed to go through 2018. Never should have been offered at all. But I digress for now. But I cannot see Alex Smith being paid $20.6 million next year to be the Chiefs quarterback as Patrick Mahomes sits behind him. I think there are a couple of timelines this season where Patrick Mahomes ends up being the quarterback. I don't think it's supremely likely. I don't think it's definitely going to happen. I'm not even predicting it. But there are a couple of ways where this story goes in a very Patrick Mahomes centric direction. In 2018, I don't see how Alex Smith is on this roster. Not at that number. And he's not going to restructure to ultimately just wait around to be eventually overcome by Pat Mahomes. The only alternative, and would be an incredible alternative, that I can't remember who I was talking to a couple of months ago, is one of the Chiefs guys I had on was talking about how Alex Smith would have trade value. And it makes sense in a couple of scenarios. The two teams that keep lighting up for me on this sort of this fictional trade board for next year are the Jags and the Steelers, because the Steelers could be losing Ben Roethlisberger. He keeps talking about retirement. I don't expect that to happen yet, though. But if the Steelers were to lose Ben Roethlisberger, Alex Smith gives you a better chance to contend than anybody else you're going to be able to bring together. And the Jags are constantly telling themselves they're going to be contenders, and then Blake Bortles is consistently too bad for words, and the team gets completely undercut. Those are two teams that, without Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh, would benefit from bringing in a guy like Alex Smith, or specifically Alex Smith. The problem is, I don't see either of those teams paying Alex Smith $20 million either. Now, it would be just for 1 year if he stayed on the current contract. It's also kind of a weird move as you try to groom a rookie to take over in 2019. Up in the ether still, when it's all very, very much speculative and we're putting together these realities that don't actually exist yet. But I find that slightly interesting. The thing I find extremely interesting is that Alex Smith cannot possibly be the quarterback in 2018, not for $21 million. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you were talking about Alex Smith on this contract in 2018 and then bringing in rookie Pat Mahomes, I would be expecting that cap cut to come relatively soon, and you just throw the rookie into the fire. it's why the Chiefs had to make the Mahomes move this year. There was no other option. If you don't want to throw a rookie straight into it next year, you had to make the move this season. That cap space is so valuable, especially whenever you're working with the kind of deficit the Chiefs are working with. When John Dorsey leaves your team with $10 million in expected dead cap money to pay next year, about $9.5 million this year, maybe more for the Chiefs next year. That $10 million is just for Smith, Hawley, and Jeremy Maclin. You're going to have to make your space elsewhere. There's no better place to do it than at the quarterback position because it gives you the largest margin. And you saw the Seahawks do it with Russell Wilson. You saw the Ravens do it with Joe Flacco. If you don't have an elite quarterback, you'd better have a cheap one. And that's the logic that the Chiefs are going with here, and it makes sense. I don't know how I got back into that conversation, but I'm going to blame Tommy Moe. Whenever we come back, we will wrap up the show. Right? Is that right? This is the second segment of this hour. We have one segment left. Oh, boy. I got to explain to Derek the sanctity of the Drake music. It's Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday.
When I talked about the Chiefs and Colin Kaepernick, you guys loved it.
With Joshua Briscoe.
No way. Smith is doing just fine. Give him some weapons to throw to. That one was actually the most offensive one to me.
On Sports Radio 810.
And my own personal favorite. Consider sticking your head in an oven.
WHB.
Closing up shop here on Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Been talking about the Chiefs and John Dorsey and the situation they're left in currently, what it would mean for Brett Veach to step in, Albert Breer's article. There's some actual, like, football stuff that also hit the internet about the Chiefs this week. Actually, yesterday, Pro Football Focus has been tweeting out some really interesting stats throughout the offseason. Little graphics with various statistics of impact, but not necessarily the obvious ones. In fact, never the obvious ones. In fact, they have a stat called wide receiver rating, which is the passer rating generated whenever targeting a specific receiver. And on post routes, going across the middle, essentially, on little slants, not slant, that's a different thing, but I'm trying to help if you don't know what a post route is. I would say it goes like this and then like this, but I can't draw you a picture. We're on radio. But on post routes, Travis Kelce has the best receiver rating in football. And I guess this was from last season. And the top three are Travis Kelce, Julio Jones, and then Cameron Brait out of Tampa Bay. Julio Jones, in second place, has given Matt Ryan a 173 would be impossible. 137.5 passer rating whenever targeting him on post routes. Travis Kelce has given a 145.8 passer rating to almost entirely Alex Smith whenever running post routes. And this is even more evidence, something we've known since, I don't know, like three games into last year. Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill have to be the core of this offense. Now, I have argued over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, this offense would be in much better shape if it also had Jeremy Maclin. I'm completely comfortable having Jeremy Maclin be your third weapon, even at his price, because his price in context of what Kelce and Hill and Conley are getting paid, that whole package, those four guys, was totally fine. It was under $20 million for those four guys. It cost the Broncos more for Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders than it cost the Chiefs for those four guys, including Jeremy Maclin. Maclin is in Baltimore now, so I will try to let that go. The problem now is that opposing defenses are more aware of the fact that this is an offense that has to run through Travis Kelce. It's an offense that has to be about using Tyreek Hill in the most efficient way, in the way that gives you the least heartbreak whenever Alex Smith underthrows him going deep. But the state of the offense, it has to be better this year, which I guess I understand if you are using this as an argument against Andy Reid's importance. I think him as a head coach, he as a head coach has an undeniably large importance, but the problems that he faced last year, the problems he created for himself, are just gut-wrenching. Because the Chiefs' offense last year was across the board middle of the road, and across the board not good enough in big moments. Talked about that a little bit earlier, going back to the Steelers playoff game, where in the biggest moment the offense was just completely nowhere to be found. A huge part of that falls to Andy Reid. But we also saw Andy Reid this offseason admit publicly that part of it is also on the quarterback, both on his skill set and what he demands to be paid based off of his veteranness. Whenever the Chiefs drafted Patrick Mahomes, they pretty openly told us, oh, well, yeah, I mean, this is largely Andy Reid, but it's also largely Alex Smith. Which is something we all knew. Now, it didn't surprise any of us, but it surprised me a little bit to see the Chiefs admit it. So now where the offense goes will be perpetually interesting to me, because a huge part of the problem last year was that they didn't have a running game to speak of. And I have my concerns here as well, because so bringing in Kareem Hunt from Toledo, third-round draft pick for the Chiefs this year, he has some really important skill sets. You don't hear this come up a lot when you're talking about running backs, but he has exceptional balance, which means that whenever I've seen him get hit, he, at an alarming rate, is able to stay on his feet. And I think his most important trait is his vision, something that we talk about only whenever it's bad, usually. We talk about for Le'Veon Bell and Nile Davis, I guess. They're the extremes. Le'Veon Bell is extremely patient and has incredible vision. So he makes the right choice at an incredible pace. Nile Davis routinely just ran wherever the play said to go and prayed that it went exactly according to plan, which is not a great recipe for success in the NFL in general, if I may be so bold. So I like that Kareem Hunt is bringing that to the table. The problem, though, is that Charkandrick West and Spencer Ware, in reverse order, also do some things really well, and they were incredibly ineffective last year. I mean, it just wasn't good.
The Chiefs' run game also suffered last year as soon as Parker Anger went out with a torn ACL. He was their best run blocker.
I would argue that severely, because, first of all, he was a rookie who had, like, what, two games of NFL experience? I don't think you can consider
him. He didn't get
injured
until, like, the end of October.
I'll look that up. But Zach Fulton has been a completely usable guard in the NFL for a couple of years now. I have no gripe with Zach Fulton. I think you can have, where I was leading there, though, is you can have a larger conversation about the offensive line. And this is whenever the John Dorsey thing is actually making me a little bit nervous, because I spent a large part of last year looking at Spencer Ware and Charkandrick West's inability to have a consistent impact on the game, and then said, well, we've seen those guys as running backs be successful. The offensive line has been horrendous against the run, or on the run, or whatever. In fact, by any of the metrics, the Chiefs actually were pretty solid at pass blocking and really horrific at run blocking, which is something that your eyes also would have told you. But what worries me, though, then, is that the worst part of the Chiefs' run blocking was Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, by grading and by the eyeball test, from my standpoint. Seth Kizer might disagree with me. He was pretty much behind LDT's development and behind that contract that he got this offseason. So we may be able to fight on that, I don't know. But for whatever they are, the Chiefs' offensive line is here to stay. the Chiefs offensive line is across the board locked up. Morse in the middle on his rookie deal still. Parker Anger beside him, rookie deal still. LDT long-term deal. Eric Fisher long-term deal. Mitchell Schwartz long-term deal. The offensive line is intact. And if one of those three guys in the middle goes down, Zach Fulton can step in and perform pretty well. I think Mitch Morse is the most irreplaceable of those three guys in the middle. But especially if either of those guards go down, Zach Fulton can step in and be good. So if the offensive line was the problem last year, that's not going to get better. Unless the guys get better, which is something that you can leave some room for player improvement. But betting on large-scale unit improvement without making any changes to your personnel, that's kind of a risky business. So maybe Kareem Hunt, with all those traits that we talked about, maybe Kareem Hunt can step in and can make the best of the scenario. Maybe the offensive line, is better off this year. Maybe Parker Anger coming back gives them a spark. Maybe LDT is moving in the right direction. Maybe in large part it was because the defenses weren't afraid of whatever West or Ware could do. Although I think Spencer Ware shows a lot of really good things. His versatility last year surprised me because in 2016 or 2015, Charkandrick West seemed to be the guy who would take care of all of the routes out of the backfield sort of scenarios. And Spencer Ware did that really well last year, which really surprised me. I think also that Kareem Hunt and Spencer Ware will be the two guys in large part splitting the reps through training camp and then eventually into the actual season. I would be surprised to see it go any other direction. I think Charkandrick West is the third guy, and Ware and Hunt will be the two that are making the impact.
Don't forget about C.J. Spiller. They are really loving him.
I will forget about C.J. Spiller. I can't see him making this team. I just don't see it. And if he does, it'll be at Charkandrick West's expense. And Charkandrick West's expense from a cap situation actually would eventually cost them because they gave West and Ware those contracts at virtually the exact same time. So there's actually kind of a sneaky amount of money wrapped up in the running backs. The other thing that Seth Kizer brought up a couple of weeks ago that I thought was really insightful is that the Chiefs have, in large part, been very open about their snaps in training camp. Whenever they're trying to get a guy ready for the season, they're not going to protect a veteran's they're not going to protect the feelings of a veteran because they don't want Eric Kush to feel like Mitch Morse is unjustly jumping him. If they draft Mitch Morse to step in and be the center day one, they're going to try to get him ready for that day one. The Chiefs are in that situation now with Kareem Hunt. I think we're going to see him get those training camp reps, those first team reps, right there with Spencer Ware as those two guys try to revitalize the run game. Thank you for listening here to Sports Sunday. My name is Joshua Briscoe. You can always follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. Tweet me there. Let me know what you think of the show and maybe even of the specific topics. We can go however we want in whatever direction we want because it's Twitter, and Twitter is a madhouse. On Twitter, you can be in charge of the free world, at the top of the free world, and tweet gifs of yourself tackling CNN. Anything can happen on Twitter. It's America. I mean, it's the internet. It's both, I guess. I don't know. Thank you, Derek Hagelin, for stepping in Charlie Carlin's absence and spinning the records over there. My name's Joshua Briscoe. I said that already. And I realized that I think I actually started the whole outro thing a little bit too soon, and now I'm filling some of this dead time with just sort of like meaningless rambling. Oh, oof, made it.